What's going on, fight fans? Welcome to Levels. I'm Jeremy Long, joined as always by the Sportsnista Cassandra Cousineau. And as usual, right when we pull up at the beginning of the show, Cece has either fallen off of her books or her camera's fallen over or something's happened where she's not on screen. I love that you are consistent that way. Cece, how are you?
Making an entrance. That's all. Just making That's an entrance.
That's it. Come on now. Now, we have a really special show, and it's always special when our guy Jamel Herring stops by. And what more can we say about our guy? We're so super happy to have him. He's a friend of the show, and, of course, we're incredibly proud to know him because of all the things he does, not only inside the ring, but outside as well. So everyone's busy, so let's just hop right into it. Let's bring him right in. I know you're excited. There he is, the champ. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's good to see you both, man. It's good to see you both.
The champ is here.
Yeah, that's right. Jamel, just kicking it off, man. You know, starting off, just, you know, how are things right now, entering into that holiday season, entering into everything where it gets a little dicey for those that might be on the line about the weight. You know, it's Thanksgiving time, holiday time, cookie time, baby. I know I'm ready. How are you? I mean,
everything's been cool for the most part. Like I was saying earlier, I'm in the process of moving. I guess it's like you pointed out, it's a top rank thing. So
yeah, every time we have a top rank moving,
I think once I get the moving and everything situated, all the holiday season, that'll be just the breeze. You know, it'll just be more relaxing because after you just like, okay, I got the heavy load and all that other mess out the way. Now I can just relax.
Man, you know, before you guys pointed that out, I didn't even realize that. It's like almost every time we're talking to a fighter, they're in the process of moving. You guys, you know, change apartments every 3 weeks.
Going into the big house. You see the walls behind me are bare right now. I got to take everything down, but gotta get it done.
Where's the belt going to go in the new house?
Oh, the man cave.
Definitely.
Ah. Oh, got a man cave. And I see you just got a PS5.
Yes.
Have you played it yet?
Oh yeah, I played it, but now I gotta pack it back up in like tomorrow. Tomorrow's the move. Yeah, tomorrow's I gotta pack it back up.
You figured out the disc situation.
Up. Like you gotta like I don't know. We're used to having it this way and slide in. Right. Now this way and I don't. I gotta Sony. You need to fix that. Sony, get that done.
Be honest. How long did it take you to figure that out?
I had to like, you know, Google is your friend. Google is your friend.
Okay. Hey, no shame in that, man.
I mean, I was going old school. You know, it would take a disc, you blow on it, you I'm sitting like a good like 15, 20 minutes doing it. I'm like, what is going on? And like, let me just Google. Google is your friend.
Yeah, everyone's little brother did it better than you. Like, no, you don't blow on it like this. You blow on it like this.
We were taking it.
And you got to catch the lip of it right when you're pushing it in so it catches a little bit.
Grip is slow. I'm thinking like, maybe I got to just.
Nobody move right when you do it.
I don't know.
Foolishness.
Go ahead.
Well, you do have some things that you know. You've got a fight on the horizon.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard Frampton's name. Is that finalized?
I believe this fight is about 90% done. I just spoke with the guys at MTK Global literally yesterday. I've been told that he's starting camp Monday, and I'm starting camp Monday as well. So I will be skipping Thanksgiving. Because I got big things on the horizon, as you guys pointed out.
You can have the protein, though. You can have protein.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not the first Thanksgiving I missed, but like I said, it's a big fight that I have to really take seriously. And like I said, both fighters will be starting camp Monday. So, like I said, the fight's 90% done. We're just trying to get the logistics part done and out the way to get that going.
You still targeting Martin Luther King birthday weekend?
I would say. I think the last time we heard was the earliest is January 17th. That's the earliest. So, you know, that's about 8 weeks out, which is a reasonable enough time for us to go prepare well. And I know that London was actually the target that they were looking for. The target base they're trying to do was London. So we're just you know, and of course we got to see what the world is going through because the pandemic. So we got, and I think that's just basically holding things up as well because you just don't know due to the pandemic, if maybe you know, the UK will shut down or vice versa over here. So that's playing a lot of, but like for the most part, both fighters have been informed just to get ready and just continue on as if the fight is happening. So that's what we're going to do.
Any hesitations or anything about going over to London and fighting in his backyard?
No. It's crazy because originally I was supposed to fight him in Belfast in June before everything got shut down. But you know, that was in Northern Ireland. But the UK for me, you know, I've been there, of course, as a 2012 Olympian. So I've been there. I've got friends over there. I have a base over there as well. And, you know, as long as I have, you know, neutral judging, I really don't care where the fight is at. That's just me. Like I said, if you're labeled as, you know, world champion, you're supposed to fight anywhere in the world, wherever they call you at, in my opinion, at least. So, you know, I'm fine with it. As long as we get an even playing field, I don't mind where the fight's at.
We're talking with WBO junior lightweight champion Jamel Herring. Let's talk about some judging. You were in the bubble.
Yes.
For the Terrence Crawford fight. And so the fight before Maloney and Franco was held up because of some judging. Now, it was ruled that it was an accidental headbutt. And I'm not going to ask you your opinion on that so much so, but how was that affecting Crawford in the dressing room? Because he was preempted by college football first. Right. And then you had the 30-minute instant review. I never had nothing instant that took 30 minutes in my life. So maybe we should just call it review and take instant off of that. But what was it like for him waiting? And then can you talk about what it would be like as a fighter, just in general, how you would handle something like that?
I'll say for me being back there with Bud, I think Bud took it quite well. But me, I know how I am when my nerves are going and things like that nature. It's like the longer you wait, the more it gets to you. So and like for me, when I step foot in the ring, I'm fine, you know, because it's like, okay, I'm here. This is what we came to do. Let's handle business. But it's like when you're in there waiting and waiting out. And I was back there like, man, like I was getting like anxious and like nervous just looking at the screen, the replay over and over. But I'm looking at Bud and, you know, he's keeping a cool head and he's just warming up and, you know, he's in his zone. So he took it quite well. But I think, like I said, for any other fighter, it'd have been nerve-wracking.
How was Bomac?
Oh, he was actually cool. I think his main thing was actually just trying to, for once, keep Bud, you know, cool and calm. Because it was a despite what anybody would say, like I really appreciate Kell Brook as a fighter. I was a fan of Kell Brook. I appreciate his craft. So we all knew that, you know, Kell Brook wasn't coming there to pick up a paycheck. You know, Kell Brook was coming to win another world title and make a statement. So, and we all knew that. And so, you know, everyone was just main focus, just keeping, you know, the main man, which is Terrence, just calm and cool and just focus on what's ahead.
Now you mentioned, you know, the mental aspect of it. You know, of course you served in the Marines. I mean, you've gone through all of this now, and you're what, 24 fights into your career or so. You know, so a longtime vet in everything you've done. Now, is that something, that mental aspect, just staying calm and going, okay, I despite the hiccups, despite the delays, you know, I'm going to still get in there and handle business. Do you think a younger fighter would respond the same? Is it something you learn, or is it just something that's within you personally and you know, and guys like Bud Crawford and guys like that?
I think it's something within you personally because, you know, even – in the amateurs, you know, we see the fighters are, you know, fighters are fighters. So you get the butterflies and things of that nature. It just in you and how you control it and what keeps you calm. Like sometimes when I'm back there with Terrence and one of his other fights, you know, we hear the, like even the last fight, matter of fact, we hear the music playing. So the music, you know, sometimes music keeps people calm. Sometimes you get guys like me at times where it's cool to have music, but then when it starts getting closer to you getting to that entrance, you want everything just to be silent and just everybody just to keep, you know, just to be calm and easy in the back. So it's just all about how you, you know, what benefits you and how you approach things in and out of the ring, matter of fact.
So the last time we saw our WBO champion, there was a little bit of controversy at the end of your fight. So I have a two-part question. The first one is that When did you hear the commentary that was coming out of Andre Ward and Tim Bradley, and how did you process that?
I'm glad you brought that up. No one knows this. I did not watch the fight.
Did anyone talk to you about it?
You know, I got more of word of mouth. You know, I was just so upset with everything going on that I did not watch the fight. Even to this day, I did not watch the fight. I remember how it all played out. And, you know, I was kind of upset. Like, I seen the following weekend when the next card over. So I did see the, you know, hold the review and, you know, Timothy spoke about it. And, you know, he said he wouldn't take back what he said, which is fine. But, you know, me and Andre, we spoke. Like, Andre, we have each other's number and everything. So I look up to those guys still, you know, like, being a U.S. Marine, you have to learn how to take constructive criticism. Even though sometimes you may think things that are said are unfair or untrue, you still have to learn to have thick skin. So, you know, like, I'm just actually glad that, because, you know, you guys, people fail to realize, like, I was winning the fight for one, you know, a point was deducted, there was a knockdown in the fight, so people were making it, just from looking at the comments and seeing what was said, people make it seem like I was just looking for a way out. And then when I went to the, I had to go straight to the hospital after that fight. So I wasn't happy with things going on, but still there was no room for even like a celebration or anything. Like I went directly from there, put on something real quick and went to the hospital. And then when I got to the hospital, they had told me that it was an old bone in my face that didn't heal properly, probably from the Denis Shabakov fight back in 2016, that it was shifting to my eye, where they actually thought I had a broken orbital bone. So they were saying luckily it was stopped when it was stopped, because I could have irritated the old injury even more. I had a scratched retina, so it was like I had all these going on. And I'm thinking that during the fight, though, I thought it was just like it was so blurry. I thought I actually had blood in my eye. But when I actually look back at just that last round, I see that it wasn't so much of the cut, because I actually didn't get stitched. They actually glued it. But they were saying that, yeah, it was more of the the cornea was scratched. My cornea was scratched in my eye, so that was causing the blurred vision. And then the old injury from the from a past fight, that was bothering my right eye socket. So. Like I think I was more hurt because it was more to it going on, you know, with the injury than people were assuming, that like I just gave it up. I mean, I've been, like, you guys seen it in plenty of fights. I've been cut, same eye, plenty of times, even worse. And I still kept going. Even my top ranked debut, I got cut, same eye, and I ended up, you know, pushing the fight to where I got a stoppage. But I knew something was just terribly wrong, and it was like it was going into round nine, so I only had 9, 10, 11. Like it was only, you know, only a few more rounds. It wasn't like it was round three and I was looking for a way out. Like I was, you know, I was well on to a good victory, but things happen. And, you know, but I'm actually just glad that I got that ring rust during that time, instead of like going through that ring rust with a fight like Carl Frampton. And not to mention, you guys seen it, I had to go through COVID-19. I was in three.
A couple bouts of it, right?
Yeah, I was training from end of April to September. So that's a long time to be training for one fight. it was just taking a toll on my, but me thinking of being a true world champion, I was the one still pushing to make the fight. You know, I could have just said, you know what, forget this, let me just sit out and wait for the Frampton fight. But no, I'm thinking being a true world champion, you would get more praise. But then it's like, I got so much criticism. It was like, it was just crazy. But you know, once I got the rest from then to now, my head is clear, and it's just behind me now.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I mean, right after all of that happened, you and your family kind of had a semi-public discussion about whether if it's even worth it to carry on. I mean, you've done what you've done. No one can take away anything, you know, that you've done in your career, and you've been through way bigger things than just boxing and everything. Right. How real were the discussions internally kind of walking away from everything?
It's crazy that, you know, that came from on my end. It came from, like, I was just more hurt of what was being said. It was like, man, I've been through so much worse. And then, like, to be called, like, just being a Marine and then being called a quitter, it was like, I think that was, like, the worst thing you can ever, like, man, like, you know, I've been through, like, I lost a daughter. You know, I had to fight through that. You know, I had PTSD. right. You know, depression, and I've been through so many obstacles just outside of the ring alone. But it was like, for me getting injured by people, you know, and I don't like to call any fighter dirty, because that's just, I don't like the bet, but people would make it seem like, you know, it was a dirty fight.
It was rugged.
Yeah, it was a rugged fight. It was like now I'm just like, man, I'm a quitter. Like, wow. But I think that's where most of it came. Like, that's why I was like, I don't need this. Like, I don't need this. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, you know, what I've gone through just in this year alone. Like, man, like, I was like literally still training, still trying to, like, I wasn't, you know, coming up as positive on COVID tests, but I still had the effects within my, you know, my lungs and things of that nature. And my body was still not where it's normally used to being at that level in training. But I was like, but me being a true fighter, you know, I was going to just keep trucking and pushing through. But, you know, I think my family was seeing that, and they took it a lot harder than I did. Cause like I said, you know, like I said, my wife, she was going off. Like, she was attacking, Miguel Cotto 1 week, and I'm like, you know, I'm thinking like, these guys I look up to. So I didn't take it too personally, but like, you know, family are different. I mean, for instance, like,
hey, family's family, man.
Yeah, for instance, we see the incident going on just between Terrence and, like I said, with Top Rank. His sister is going out there, going crazy on everybody. So like I said, family takes things a lot more, you know, personal than we as the fighters do. But I think after I cleared my head and just relaxed, and like I said, I got with MTK. They gave me just a bigger, broader vision on what I could possibly do in the future. So that's why I just had to put things behind me, take some proper rest. Cause like I said, I was going on go for like 5 months. I was just on go, you know, for one fight, and it was way too long. I just needed just to enjoy time with family and then just enjoy life again and get that hunger, you know, get that hunger back.
Yeah. Right. You are one of the top athletes in the world, and to go through COVID for as long as you did, how long did it take you to kind of to feel back to 100%?
Oh, man, I'll be honest with you guys, I was actually still feeling it due to like mid-September, remind you. I thought in beginning of September. Like, I was still like coughing up the mucus and everything in your lungs from when it affects your you know, respiratory system. So I was still going through that. But I was just, and then, you know, we get tested as athletes. So it's not like you can take anything, you know, even to like, you don't want to risk.
Got it, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to risk, you know, I don't want to risk taking something over the counter. Then it pops up in a drug test. So I had to stay away from a lot. I had to basically heal naturally at the time. But now, you know, I'm starting to feel like myself again. That's why I'm just like, I actually hope that, like, you know, the Frampton team actually looks at their fight and be like, okay, we got them. Because I know that's not me, but I hope that it look, you know, some people look at, you know, your left farmers and they think, oh yeah, we got him. He's falling off a bit. But everybody who knows me that when I go to train, I solely focus and I give it my all.
Man, it's still with everything you've done throughout your, you know, before boxing and, you know, with the Marines and everything, it's still just, it makes me laugh when people question your toughness, your heart, your grit, man. You know, I'm like, I just shake my head.
Yeah, I've used some four-letter words. I'm going to tell you right now, I was a little heated because of all the fighters in the world.
Yeah, I got the text message from you.
I was like, this ain't the one to question the heart. I mean, it's just not.
And nothing, like I said, this weekend was actually the first time I actually could have seen Tim and Andre. But I know Tim wanted to hook up a few times, but I just had to like, it's funny, when I went to visit Bud in camp a few weeks ago, the day I was flying out was the day that Andre was flying in, and he wanted to link up, but I had to take care of things home with family. Like I said, the move and everything, I had to get back, so we missed out on that. And then he wanted to talk over the weekend, but then his commentary job and everything. So like, Andre is a real, you know, is a real good one. Like, he's a real good one. He actually wants to, you know, he wanted to speak and, you know, and set things straight. And I have no issue with that. Like I said, I love Dre. Dre's a good guy. I was even man enough to even walk up to Tim and Tim. You know, I shook his hand, said how he was doing, and, you know, just let it be, because I know me. I always say if things affect you, what people say, then they must be true. But if you know they're not true, you just brush them off and just keep it moving.
Well, it may not affect you the same, because, I mean, we all deal with Twitter trolls, and I know you get your – you have your whole legion of them. Means you're doing something right. And then you, of course, there's the, you know, quote unquote journalists out there, which most of them, you know, are not real journalists of any kind of ilk. And then you have guys like Tim and Andre and these guys that have fought at the highest levels and are world champions, former world champions and things like this. So does it not necessarily sting more, but does it mean more when they, you know, either criticize or even when they praise you? Mean more knowing what they've been through similar to what you've been through?
I think, like I said, your peers that have been in the ring, I think those comments actually, they do mean more, even when it's negative or positive. Because there's been times when I have fighting meetings with them, and they'll just give me a straight up, you know, what I need to do, what I look good doing, or, you know, or what I should adding to my repertoire. But I take all that in because, this, like I said, this is guys I respect.
Right.
Who've been there before me. I never look at the, you know, you get some fighters and they get offended and they'll say, well, he's a has-been or he doesn't know what he's talking about. This is different. But no, like when those guys say things like, I was actually shocked that for one, I was on the Miguel Cotto radar. Like, like, you know, this is the guy, you know, the people looking at me like, should he be more upset? Like, no, nah, for one, it was Miguel's Cotto fighter who I was fighting. I get that. Right. So, but at the end of the day, like, I mean, at least he was watching. So
you were like, oh, Miguel knows my name.
Listen, even after the comment, what I do? Go to YouTube and put on Miguel Cotto fights. Yeah. You know, that's just, listen, I'm like, you can say what you want, okay, whatever. You can say what you want personally, but it's not gonna take away my opinion, how I look at you as a fighter or what you did in the ring itself. And all it did for me was, like I said, when I sat with my team, with Bullock and everything, it was just like, okay, they think, you know, let's go back to when I had to earn my respect when I won the world title. So that's how I look at it.
Right.
You recently signed with MTK Global. You also signed a fighter as well. And yeah, you've got this big fight on the horizon. Are we seeing you set things up for life after boxing?
Of course. I mean, I tell everybody now, I tell fighters that are still young in their career, like you, like for instance, like my guy, God bless him, Pritchard Colon. He was, you know, great talent on the rise, doing great things, and then one punch, it just took one punch and boom, that's how what I say, one punch, it just, you know, changes your whole life. So I look at it as why I have the opportunity and I'm able to actually help and bless others, you know, why not? Especially when I'm on the biggest stage of my career, why not, you know, help others get to the door? I never wanted to be that guy to be selfish, like the spotlight's on me. This is my moment. Because I'm in the gym with Bud Crawford, and he's not like that. He welcomed me with open arms. And even now when I'm going to camp, I have a fighter, Mykel Gamble from Cincinnati, who I'm bringing with me. You know, Micaiah Krepp. She's a tremendous, great, just great individual. You know, she's just easy to deal with. She's actually the first fighter that I actually signed, you know, under the brand of my partner JC from LA for First to Fight. And it just goes to show how much I respect women in boxing. I don't like to refer to it as women's boxing. I just say women in boxing because, like I said, they go through the same grueling process in the gym such as the men. And that's how I look at it. And Micaiah is one of the hardest working people that I know who lives and breathes the sport just like any other top, you know, competitor out there. And I'm just happy to finally get her pro debut out the way. She's been very patient. You know, the pandemic was a lot of setbacks for everybody. You know, fighters in general, just a lot of setbacks. And she just, you know, she believed in what we were doing, and she hung in there. And she went out there and got impressive victory. And now she has guys like, you know, Luda Bella and others who are interested in working with her. So, you know, like I said, my job is to get your foot through the door. I don't, like I said, whatever you do from there, it's your time to shine. You know, I'm not here to trying to step, you know, in your spotlight. I just want to get you in there and send you on your way and let you do your thing. Well, I forgot my man Misael Lopez from Denver too. He's another one that Luda Bella also is interested in working with as well. Misael Lopez, I didn't forget you, brother.
You got a good eye for it. So is Frampton your last fight?
No. See, I don't want to say it too loud because you know Jen might. You know, she wants to, you know, she's like, yeah, yesterday she was like,
yeah.
After the Francis fight, are you gonna take the year off? I'm like, the Francis fight's in January. You know, take the year off. I was like, no, but I'm gonna take it slow. To be honest with you guys, I'm glad you guys asked. Truthfully, Frampton fight was supposed to be a 2020 thing. And my thing was to do that and move back up north because, you know, I'm not having issues with the weight. Let's say that. I'm going to say that now. But at the same time, I know that, you know, over time it's taking toll on me. But, you know, I have a nutritionist, perfecting athletes. They do a great job. But, you know, the whole team just was like, Jamel, you've done all you can basically at 130 because you guys seen it. I try to get the Miguel Burchell fight. You know, I just want to say, I hope he's doing well because I know he had caught COVID-19 as well. Oscar Valdez's team came to me respectfully, I think, right before everything shut down. I spoke with his management, and they were real polite when Valdez was moving up to 130. Mm-hmm. Technically, he would have been my mentor because, you know, he was a super piece. Yeah. He was a champion at featherweight. And, you know, they came to me because, Jamel, we're going to go a different route. That's what they went, the Miguel Burchell route. And you guys never see me say, oh, Valdez, duck me. And no, because that's being fake. I spoke to, you know, the guys over there, and they said that they wanted to go the Miguel Burchell route. So that's what led me to the Frampton fight, because I'm looking like, you know, that kid without a dance at the school dance. Like, you know, without a date, without the school dance. Like, okay, you guys. Miguel Burchell and Oscar Valdez got a date over here. Like, what am I gonna do? To stay in the mix of this?
Just
this
stay over here.
You gotta partner up, man.
I'm gonna get out this. Yeah. You know, we approached Top Rank about Carl Frampton because I seen an interview. Because this is why, you know, I tell fighters pay attention to everything that goes on, because I seen an interview where Frampton wanted to fight Valdez at either 126, and he said, "Oh, I would move up to 130." To fight him as well. So I told Carl Moretti and Bob Arum, I came to know them. They thought I was crazy. This is a funny true story. They thought I was crazy when I said, hey, I think this is at the Tyson Fury fight when he had got cut, that bad cut. During the fight, I was like, hey, why not we make a fight with Carl Frampton? And he looked at me and was like, he's not gonna fight you. I said, well, I said, no, I said, he just said that he will fight Valdez at 130, so why not make it his berth, and we'll put the title on the line. And that's what basically got him to that whole, you know, he wants to make history as the first Irish fighter to be a 3-time world champion. So that's how he basically got that fight on the. I even heard in an interview that even Bob Arum said that, well, you know, Jamel was the one who came up with the idea of fighting Frampton, and Frampton agreed, you know, to do it. So that's when we did the thing last November when I jumped in the ring, and that's when we first met face to face, and everything was good. Right. But that just goes to show you like how much I pay attention to everything that goes on within the sport. But I think after Frampton was supposed to be the last fight, and I wanted just to move up because I couldn't. After that, I couldn't get a unification matchup. You know, I love my bro JoJo. Me and JoJo actually spoke about fighting each other, but JoJo was you know, he's my 2012 Olympian also, so that'd have been a good story to sell. But you know, JoJo had
130s on fire.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But JoJo has his thing going on where he may have to still do the Farmer rematch, or he has to fight his mandatory as well. So it was like, instead of sitting and running away, you know, I'll just go up, you know, finish business at 135 if I had to.
So we got a question here from one of our watchers right now. Let's see if I'll pull this up here. What are your thoughts on Deontay Wilder's talking? All his talking about Tyson Fury and the, the excuses or the challenges to the legitimacy definitely, of everything.
Allegations. And I'll say this. I was actually rooting for Wilder in the rematch because if you look at his history in rematches, Wilder gets his guys out of there faster than he did in the first fight. You know, the Burn rematch.
Yeah, Burmese to Burn. And
Ortiz rematch.
Ortiz, yeah.
You know, that's just this thing. In rematches, I guess he's more comfortable with his opponent now. He knows how to get him out of there. So let me just say, I was actually rooting for him. But, like, I thought Fury won it fair and square, in my opinion. The Nevada Commission is I would say a great commission, but I know there was a lot of backlash over the weekend. So over there, but they're usually good. With the, you know, like they had one of his trainers in the back during the hand wrapping. We know that takes place. They go through the process of checking gloves. So you know when you're fitting gloves, especially for championship fights. So, but I think it's just crazy, and I just feel more for Mark Breland for what he was mm-hmm. going through. Like, yeah. I thought Mark Breland didn't deserve that. Okay, if you want to part ways, okay, then so be it. But you ain't got to go out there and publicly saying the guy was, you know, spiked your water and then.
Yeah.
But all I said was this: I'm like, if Wilder's Fury supposedly had an egg shape, whatever, in his glove, wouldn't you thank Mark Breland for stopping it because it potentially saving your life? If that was the case, then, instead of bashing him. That's what I got to say.
Yeah, you would think there's a lot of strange things coming from Deontay Wilder, these things. It's disappointing it's given people a chance to then disparage his talent because of what he's saying. And that's unfortunate, but he's doing it. So he's
in the end, like, champ. There's nothing that I was kind of confused about was after the whole thing when I guess the contract supposedly expired, that's when he came out of where he was at and he just got real vocal. But leading up to, you know, the original date was December 19th. We didn't hear anything from him or his team. So I don't know. Like I said, I just feel like I respect Deontay, but I expect better. You know, I expect better and more from him.
Well, we know that, of course, you're good friends with Bud Crawford and you guys get in there and you train and mix it up and everything. Just your opinion. I know he just fought emphatic win. Who would you like to see him get in there with next? Because there's a bunch of guys that say they want to fight him, right. But very few guys are offering to sign on that dotted line. Who would you like to see?
Well, I'll just say this also. I'm still close friends with Errol Spence. And that's the main guy that we all want him to fight. And I spoke with Earl.
Make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And the crazy thing is, I'll be first. He actually came to me and said that he wants that fight. He wants to fight. So, like you pointed out, you know, the guys always say they want it, but now he really wants to fight. But you could tell they're going to have that issue with the business side. As you can see, yesterday, that was basically the talk of social media, which is the 60-40. 45-45 split and 50-50. It was just like that. Was all but I tell people to kind of like relax on that because as a fighter, I'll take that as a sign of disrespect. And I don't talk about the negotiation wise. I'm talking about the part where people forget Errol has to fight Danny Garcia. So I'm looking mm-hmm. at that like if I'm Danny and you got the world talking about this fight, you know, that will fire me up because I mean. A similar situation happened with me with the Ito fight. They was already talking about Ito and Burchell in a unification matchup, which is why Burchell was there at the fight to begin with. And right. then, you know, I came in there and ruined everything. And, you know, here we are now. So, you know, I would tell the people just let the – I'm not saying that Errol is looking over Danny, but I was like, yo, let's get through one fight at a time before we even start having these arguments on who deserves what and this and that. Because, like I said, Danny's another good friend of mine, and I know – you know, he's probably looking at this as, you know, his back against the wall and it's maybe his last chance to do something great at welterweight. Because, you know, he's coming up short with guys like Thurman and Sean, you know, in good fight. Right. He's always come up a tad short. So he's probably looking at this like, you know, I can't let this slip. I can't let this slip away.
Yeah, so we're going to let you go soon. Before we wrap up, I know you're going into camp on Monday. But your Thanksgiving's going to be a little bit light. So I'm going to give you a choice of four things and one got to go, okay? Pumpkin pie, pecan pie, sweet potato pie, and let's throw in apple pie. Which apple one got to go?
Apple pie stays. Okay. That stays. I think... Maybe pecan has to go. I was thinking, you got to look at it. The pumpkin pie and the sweet potato pie are the old tradition to where the house you go to, those you see those two fire, one of those or one of the each display. So the other one has to go. And me, I love apple pie, so that stays. That stays.
There you go.
See, yeah, I knew it was going to be pecan because you don't You have to have the southern pecan, not pecan.
Right.
Pecan. See, you haven't had it.
If you said pecan, then
grew up in the south. As soon as I heard it, I was like,
pecan chocolate deluxe, you know, from a Ghostface Killer. They was calling it pecan when I was coming up. So pecan for me.
I learned it on the streets.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, speaking of, and I know you got a lot of fights, the left, or depending on what you and Jen talk about. But you know, you often post things about wrestling and things like that. I think you would do wonderful. Joining up into maybe a WWE or something like that, man.
My guy, yeah. JT at Wildcard King, he actually pitched that idea of doing something with the WWE. But again, the pandemic hit and put everything to a halt. But another thing that I'm definitely interested in getting into, and I have been approached, I guess, tonight, the Ring City.
Yeah.
I have been approached about doing commentating.
Oh,
you guys are, like you pointed out,
phenomenal.
I always stay tuned, even when put my opinion through Twitter, especially when I'm watching a fight. So they are posting about that, but I had to put it on hold for now because, like I said, I'm gonna prepare for the Phantom fight. But they definitely are keeping that open mind. I know me and Christina Poncher, she's we're gonna do a pilot soon.
Ooh.
Or a Sirius XM podcast as well. So there's definitely things I definitely want to dip and dive into. Just for the love of the sport.
Anything that's that money Christina right there. Poncher is connected to, that is a legit thing that people need to tune into. Now we're gonna add you to it.
Yeah, look out for that. Look out for that. I think we're supposed to do the pilot this weekend, but they might push it back to next week and stuff, but I'm definitely training camp or not, I will be doing my part and
love it.
Get it in there.
Man, that's money right there. That's money. Well, I'll let CC sign off here, but I am going to say thank you so much, Jamel, for your time. As always, man, we love having you on, mixing it up with you. And
we gotta do this again when I'm in the middle of camp.
All right.
But we can do some updates and how everything is going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like, of course, anytime.
I gotta get my guy next to me, Bud.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then
I gotta come out the shadows and get in. Get in here and feel the love, man.
Heck yeah!
Because you guys at Top Rank have this thing where you like to pop up behind guys during interviews to give waves. So now
we saw you acting up. We saw you.
Y'all cut ups, man. So thank you for your time, man. I'll let CC close it out, but thank you, man. Always great talking to you, brother.
Anytime, man.
Yeah. Jamel Herring, WBO champion. You're going to see him back in the ring sometime early next year against Carl Frampton. Check him out on Twitter and Instagram for certain. And definitely a podcast coming up with Christina Poncher and who knows, some other things.
Yes.
Man. Good luck to you with the move.
Have a good move. Enjoy that PS5. Remember the disc upside down, man.
I got you, man.
All right. Take care, man.
All right.
Have a good one. There you go. Oops. There we go. My big head up there.
I meant to ask what he was playing. I don't know. My son was asking for the PS5, and I was just kind of like, for what?
I'm still rocking. I'm still rocking my old Xbox there. So, but Jamel doing his thing, man. Carl Frampton certainly doesn't sound like it's going to be his last fight. I hardly doubt it, man, because he's still got a lot left in the tank. One of the real good guys of boxing. I mean, I'm really interested in this show, that pilot he's going to do with Christina Poncher. That's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, for certain. You know, if he's going to go up to, let's say 135, I mean, you're talking like Gervonta Davis territory there. They are on different sides of the street, so we'll see, how the kids like to play. But still.
Hey, if the money's right, people do whatever, so.
I could see him actually if he stayed at 130. Lomachenko is going to come back, and he's still going to command a pretty good size event. That could be a nice matchup if he stayed at 130.
Yeah, Loma's got some interesting. I think it's going to be a little while before he gets back just because I know he's got to figure out some things, man, because he looked absolutely I can't decide if Teofimo looked that good, in which he really did, or if Lomo just looked that bad, because we've never seen him.
Guys can get old and around.
They can. They can. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Teofimo, because, you know, last time we chatted with him and he was moving as well. You know, he has been eyeballing that for years and years, and it started, you know, so long ago and everything. So it's very interesting to see there's right in that mix there, 130, 135, you know, there's a lot going on, man. Like you said, Tank Chris Davis
Stevenson and, is in there.
Yeah. All those guys are right in there, right in the mix. And of course, you know, you have your undisputed guy at Teofimo right around there floating around, who
he will be moving up soon.
Yeah, he'll be moving up soon. But when he does, you know, all those belts
be the
are
same
going,
guys.
These same guys. So we're gonna have you know, having title fights left and right, but in that mix, man. So really exciting division, and of course we're really happy that Jamel's still in that mix.
I'm glad that he talked about kind of how he processed the aftermath and the commentary. It sounds like he was dealing with more of a significant injury. It was affecting him more during that fight than people actually knew. And he was dealing with that instead of, and good for him, immediately hearing about and addressing what people were saying. Because that's got, it's like, dude, I'm a vet, and, you know, and he lost a child. Like, I'm quitting? That just don't make sense. One plus one is two, fools.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to, you know, make sure I asked him about, you know, the words coming from Tim and Andre, because, you know, they're guys that have spent time in the ring. They're guys that have won world championships at the highest levels, you know, and so I think it means more. You know, when these guys say it, whether it's criticism or whether it's praise, it means more than, you know, you know, screw Twitter. I absolutely hate the place. And then, you know, most, you know, I mean, you and I know most journalists in MMA and boxing are not journalists. They're just people who decided, I'll just be this today, you know. And so it's easy. They like to go around and call people Twitters when, you know, if they got hit in the mouth, they'd go home crying to mama.
Be
all
awesome.
Day, every day. So,
speaking of crying to mama, Maloney got robbed last week. Dude got robbed, and I wouldn't blame him for crying to mama. I'm like, can you sue? Can they sue like the boxing commission? He probably wouldn't.
I know,
like,
they've officially appealed. I saw that pop up the other day that he and his team officially appealed the decision. Who knows what's going to come of that? The commission doesn't have a long history of overturning once they make a decision there.
It took them 30 minutes.
I think our co-host Ramblin' Ralph had a good point saying 80-year-old men staring at an 8-inch screen, you know, it ain't easy for them to see, you know, but that can't be the excuse from here on out. But again, the commission does not have a long history of overturning these things. They like the decisions that are being made there at ringside and everything else, good or bad. And so, you know, but this one, if one is going to be overturned, this has got to be the most egregious one, the most obvious one that's out there. And the very short history of, like, the replay system, or, you know, even the last few years. So we'll see what happens.
Bob Arum did not have a good night, even though Crawford won. He wanted to fight Bob Bennett. You know, that whole thing went sideways. It was not a good look for boxing. But then he had this tension with Terrence Crawford, who was only under contract for, what, another 30 days with Top Rank. And then you got Bob coming out of his mouth publicly multiple times, basically saying, doesn't matter to him. Not basically. What he said was, who needs him? I could build a house in Beverly Hills with the money I've lost on him. He's got to do more self-promotion. And it's like, even Dana White, I don't know if you saw this, but Dana White basically said, you know, F Bob Arum, he's an effing scumbag. It's not your fighter's job to promote, which was hilarious.
Which is hilarious, by the way.
Isn't it ironic?
Yeah, it's a little, it's a little funny Dana White saying all that stuff whenever he cuts guys for less. For
or to talk about fighter pay. I mean,
yeah, talk about fighter pay. I mean,
it's like, ooh, pot on, and kettle.
Yeah, right. Pot, yeah. Maybe you're all scumbags. Maybe that's what it is.
But you got Bob Arum. He's like, I mean, he just couldn't help himself because he keeps saying these things. So if you're Terrence Crawford, what do you do?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the market's kind of being reset. You know, you saw what happens when an organization, even a big organization, gives someone like Canelo $365 million and tries to guarantee it. And then can't. And then, you know, now all of a sudden his price point is here. Like, hey, they were giving me $30 million a fight, you know. So, you know, what am I going to drop down here and make $8 million, whatever these guys have already given? So it really kind of, you know, it's we're going to see in 2021, and COVID has kind of kicked everything off, this kind of resetting of the market value, man. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys are, you know, are you got to get out there and promote. If you're a fighter, you have to promote. And there are guys that are really good at it. And I say guys collectively, even the women that are really good at it. And then you see fighters who are really bad at it. I just want to fight and everything. And like our guy, Jay Chaudhry at Break Media says, you know, you got to, you know, you can't just be a fighter. You got to go out there and you got to engage and everything mm-hmm. else. And yeah. And then you have the anomalies like Clarissa Shields, who is engaging, who does command a lot of, is, you know, following and everything else, and they absolutely won't put her in the ring.
They just whiffed.
Well, for anything. So it's going to be I think 2021 is going to be a proved great resetting of where everything is. So, or maybe not. Who the hell knows?
It's boxing, you know. You figure it out one week and then it change up on you the following week. Do you have some UFC happening on Saturday? Yeah. Figueredo is going to be back.
Figueredo.
Here.
I love.
But the fight I'm most interested in is Valentina Shevchenko and Jennifer Maya. Find out tomorrow if Jennifer makes weight. It's kind of always, you know, a thing with her. But I was on the virtual press conference, which was long, very long, by the way. A lot of fighters to get through. Valentina was, you know, she's cutting weight. She's getting ready for a fight. So she was very direct, like she always is. But, you know, I think it goes under the radar just how well-rounded of a business person she is as right. well. First of all, she speaks, what, four different languages? She was switching in and out of, she spoke Spanish. Even one of the Portuguese reporters was talking to her in their brand of
their brand
of Spanish. Yeah, Portuguese and Spanish being, you know, but she understood it all, and English and Polish of course. And she's also involved in training some young fighters as well. She's the real deal. And with Amanda Nunes being out, who knows what's happening with Connor as well. You got Khabib, who knows what's happening with him. I think Valentina is going to be the next kind of shining star coming out of the UFC early for 2021.
Right. Yeah. And, you got a real dynamic position there, too, with the Shevchenko sisters fighting on the same card, you know. And, you know, whether you like it or not, whether it's fair or not, they're both marketable fighters. They have the look. They have the skill set. They can back it up, meaning, you know, and Bullet, of course, you know, I mean, she's got the cool moniker. She's got the cool, you know, style.
She finishes fights.
People love her, man. She, you know, she's an absolute gem in this sport. So, you know, for, you know, Dana White and company, they need to figure out a way to capture that real quick, because you have, you know, like you said, Khabib has allegedly moved on, minus one or two super fights here or there, probably. Connor is fighting Dustin Poirier, and there's no guarantee that Connor is going to beat Dustin Poirier in their rematch, because I believe Dustin's a much different fighter than he was when they first went toe-to-toe many years ago. And Connor, is Connor the same fighter? You know, we saw him for about 20 seconds whenever he beat up a very old Donald Cerrone at the beginning of this year. So we don't even know if Connor's the same guy. He, Mr. Can't Get Right right now. I mean, he'll always have that left hand, but, you know, we've seen what happens whenever he can't land it. So you have all of that, and then, you know, it's kind of that changing of the guard kind of thing. You know, I mean, John Jones moving up to heavyweight. Did you see the picture of John Jones at 240? My man is looks like an absolute monster. And then for the first time in 14 years, the UFC has no Spider Silva. They parted ways with Anderson Silva. So
how long before he signs with Bellator?
Scott Coker said he's not interested.
Oh, really?
Scott Coker said he was not interested in having Spider Silva. In fact, they passed on Fabricio Werdum. They offered Werdum a one-fight rematch with Fedor Emelianenko, who he upset back when Fedor was Fedor, I think, what, 2010 or so? Caught him on the ground, submission style, and he offered him that one fight. Verdum wanted multiple fights, so he ended up signing with the Pro Fight League. And so he's passed on a lot of guys. I think I don't think they're in the Roy Nelson business anymore. I don't think they're in the Frank Mir business anymore. I think Bellator, who actually just wrapped up an event just a few minutes ago, I think they're finally turning over to, you know, we have our younger guys. They did sign Corey Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're more interested now in guys that can actually come in and help build their stables rather than just come in and get a few eyeballs here and there. But we're also talking about the same guy who you let Ken Shamrock and Royce Gracie fight, you know, when they were both in their late 40s, early 50s or whatever, just a couple of years ago. And also Dada 5000 and Kimbo Slice. So, you know, I mean, these are promoters, man. They'll say whatever today and tomorrow it's going to be something else.
Never, ever know.
Yeah, but what did happen, I mean, Michael Chandler, a former Bellator champion, said there's 0% chance he's going to fight Tony Ferguson in 2020. It ain't going to happen. So, I mean, there's a lot of jostling right now. A lot of, you know, moving parts behind the scenes. And so, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I think it's going to be very, very interesting because I think, like you noted a couple of weeks ago, how long can these bigger organizations keep these events going on with, you know, B-plus level fighters and keeping their A-stars on the sideline waiting for pay-per-views and things like that? Because we're starting – I've already seen Figueroa fight – three or four times already this year, something like that.
Kevin,
like,
Holland got.
He's very impressive Kevin fighter, but
fought like five times.
You know? Yeah, Kevin Holland fights on every card. Very impressive young man.
Joaquin Buckley is back. You know, it's like when you don't have these kind of local shows, you see it in boxing. Boxing is going to hurt more than I think than UFC at the moment. But it's all going to catch up to them. Your well is going to go dry. So what is Dana going to do? Rush out the contender contestants? Some of them ain't quite ready.
Hey, Kevin Holland and them, we are seeing these younger guys come in, you know, Jeff Neal and Chaos Williams and Kamah Worthy, and these guys are fighting multiple times. They're getting a lot of airtime. So hopefully it's building these fighters up and giving them, you know, Angela Hill, I think, had an incredible 2020.
Yes, she did.
And, you know, giving them a chance to shine and everything, but how much longer can you sit and not, you know, have the A-plus things like you're used to having. So UFC is kind of built for it. Boxing is not. So we're going to see, man. It's going to be an interesting finish to a very interesting year.
Man, fuck this year. Oops.
All right. And on that note, thanks for tuning in.
Blood sugar drops levels. And stuff gets set.
Jeremy Long, the Sportsnista. We'll chat with you guys next time.